Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Kokomo City takes up a seemingly simple mantle to present the stories of four Black transgender sex workers, Daniela Carter, Leah Mitchell, Dominique Silver, and the late Coco Dedal. In Kokomo City, Daniela, Coco, Leah, and Dominique share their reflections on desire, confronting taboos, gender's many meetings, and the way Black trans women are harmed by both structural and cultural impositions that render their lives less valuable than any other. The film is the directorial debut of Dee Smith, a veteran of the music industry who was shunned when she came out as trans. In creating Kokomo City, Dee Smith has captured an unapologetic and cutting analysis of Black culture and society at large from a vantage point that is vibrating with energy, sex, and hard-earned wisdom, and tenderness, intimacy, and humor. In our conversation today, we explore how the artistic process that made Kokomo City possible reflects what Dee's learned through her own survival, thriving, and liveliness. The role of forgiveness in clearing room for creative expression, and creating art about Black LGBTQ lives that intentionally extends beyond the confining limits of mainstream LGBTQ media narratives. Dee says she was inspired to create a work of art that not only calls us to imagine and produce better options for Black trans women in the world, but also one that cis Black women, her brothers, uncles, and father would encounter, and which might provoke necessary and life-sustaining conversations about the world we want to inhabit together. I'm Josh Rivers, and I'm busy being Black with Dee Smith. Thank you so much for being here, Dee. To open my conversations on Busy Being Black, I'd like to ask all of my guests the same question. How's your heart?
My heart is happy because it's being used for what it's supposed to be used it's for. And I'm maximizing that opportunity. My heart is filled with stimulation, joy, even the things that give me anxiety or disappoint me. My heart is thriving in the sense of it knows something is going to happen today. Like last year this time, my heart was very sad and lonely because I was not feeding it, you know? I was feeding it dirt and grit and sadness. And this is a very different time for me, and I'm happy. I think my heart is much needed, but it's also really thriving. And thank you for asking.
It's so interesting to hear you talk about feeding your heart dirt and grit and sadness. And as you were saying that, I was thinking of like our diets as queer Black people in the world right now, you know, and how so much of what we experience in life is dirt and grit with glitter on it, right? We're kind of cajoled into eating shit, right? And it's not until we do something for ourselves or move closer towards our purpose that we start to see what it is that we're eating and change that up. So I feel proud of you for that shift.
Thank you. No, I mean, I love how you said that because it is literally the truth. And queer people, I've mentioned this in a couple interviews, like we're trained by each other and also society that we have to have this persona of superhumanness. Like, I mean, we really are superhuman. We really are. We're magic like that. But we really are human, right? And if even if we don't have it, we're going to spend our last to look like we have it together, and it's draining us. It's hard to maintain that facade, you know, in fear of people, you know, talking about you in a negative way, or you just not living up to the world's expectations. So I had a conversation with T.S. Madison, and I was led to tell her at the end, listen, we already know who you are. We already know your intentions. You've been doing this a long time, and you've put a lot on the line, you know, for yourself and for everyone. It's okay for us as queer people to take a break. You know, I don't think we ever tell each other that. You know, it's okay to take a week off or 2 days off for being a leader or a politician or an activist or a trans person or a queer person or a gay man. It's okay. We have to turn that off sometimes and really just press that reset button to refuel and remember who we are as people.
Yeah, that's a sermon. I was just having a conversation the other day. I'm part of a group of men who are trying to figure out how to be better men, right? And how to kind of divest from masculinity. And, you know, we're having conversations about what does masculinity look like that we want to inhabit. And I brought, you know, my queerness and my blackness and my gayness to this conversation. And I was like, I just don't know who I am if I'm not a black gay man. Right? And I can sometimes feel this fire in me saying, I'm a man. But I'm like, what is that allegiance I have to masculinity, to manness, to blackness, to gayness, to queerness? So much so that I don't know who I am without it. Right? So what does it even mean to stop wearing these labels and to know that one can rest, you know, and stop performing all the time? I don't even know.
I have chills. I've never heard anyone say that before. And it is so true. And I just thought, you know, who was I before I identified and acknowledged my transgenderism, which I've known since a child? I've just suppressed it. And it makes so, I think the most frustrating thing about our journey as queer people is that there's so much to unpack. There's so much to heal, you know? And it's like living in this world where we're demanding opportunity and demanding rights and protection and equality, we really don't have time for revisiting who we are, you know? And that's almost like a waste of life, but also fighting is also to make someone else's life better, right? A lot of the things that we're fighting for, a lot of them we really won't benefit from in our lifetime. I think we're gonna make it super sweet or much, much, much better for a generation that's probably not even born yet. So we have to look at it. Yeah, we're pioneers, but we have to kind of like pace ourselves and kind of like take turns on being in the front lines, and so that we all have the opportunity to kind of like pull back and heal and have time for ourselves and healing our minds, you know?
So as you were talking about healing, it also occurred to me as a Black trans woman that even when you're embarking on self-healing, it always signals or signifies something to someone else. Does that make sense? Like, your work is never just for you.
I think some of the issues in the transgender community is that we all have been held back for so long just as individuals. Let's just take the transgender experience out of it. I just think as individuals, we've been held back. We have so much to bring to the table. We all want to be the first to do this, we want to be the loudest to do that, we want the biggest that, the biggest dress, the biggest red carpet moment, the biggest, you know, social media, you know, viral. We all want that because we feel like we have something to say, and we all feel like it's very important. But, you know, again, I think at the end of the day, us really honing in exactly what we're trying to say as community, whether that's queer, gay people, trans people, so that we could focus on what really, 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 really matter to just move the needle forward in a more aerodynamic way. Like, we're moving, but it's kind of like chaotic, you know? It's a lot of chaos.
We're building the plane as we're flying.
No, yeah, we are. That's scary. That's kind of funny to look at, too. But, you know, but the good thing about it, with a lot of this ruckus that's happening publicly, I think, I personally think is great news. I think that the silence was worrying me. The safety nets really worry me. I think that we have to put ourselves out there as Black people in general and talk about all these issues, regardless what side we're on, how we were raised, what religion we are. We have to talk about this if we want to make it to the next 20 years, like, as a Black community. So all of the ruckus and the tensions that's happening, I welcome it, because it really shows that we're moving forward, because we're reaching more people, you know. And you know, having a timeline full of emojis of, you know, rainbows and unicorns and smiley faces really scares me. I like a good, you know, proverbial, you know, fuck you or tranny, or, you know, because it goes to show that something is being pushed where I'm getting closer and closer to someone else. And it's just, regardless if they agree, it's ruffling feathers, you know, it's making people talk, and we need more talking than silence.
That's interesting. I haven't considered that approach before, that bumping into someone else isn't just them yelling a pejorative, it's them encountering your lived experience.
That's
it
right.
Proves
That's
you're
right.
real, right?
That's right. That's right.
Wow.
That's right.
And
your not just your story, but your existence and the justification of you taking up the space in this world is actually being presented in front of people, for whatever reason, however, whether it's on their phone or a friend or a girlfriend talking about it in the bed, you're starting to reach more people. And it's not about converting anyone to anything, right? It's just about us crossing paths as humans and being introduced to each other. You know, again, we're gonna have to face the music, and I think we're just on the precipice of really having no choice but to talk about this as a community.
I think that, like, even when I think about my experience as a Black trans woman and how, you know, most Black women think, you know, that their husbands aren't sleeping with us, that their husbands aren't attracted to us, but they're the first ones that when they see us, they'll call us out and say that we're beautiful. You're really gorgeous, you're a woman, but until the moment they find out that their son or their husband likes us, it's, for them, it's surprising to find out that their kids can be gay. If they understood that it's something in our culture that your kid can be trans, then we wouldn't be in a position where, you know, at a higher rate, Black LGBTQIA plus youth are being rejected. You have to sound a certain way. You have to look a certain way. You have to be a certain way. That most of the time, the strife that comes with who we are is because we didn't become who our parents wanted us to be. That I don't need to be anything you say I need to be. Because when your husband encountered me, he saw me as a Black woman. And he too would agree that I deserve protection as a Black woman. But your ignorance keep making you think that he don't see me as one. When I carry out my Black womanhood experience, know that it looks so much like you, and it is very close to home. It is so close to home that I may be in your home when you're not there.
I've been really inspired and enchanted, I should say, by the late John Berger. So for listeners who might not know, John Berger was a British-French art critic who's credited with coining the phrase the male gaze. And part of Berger's challenge to us was that we can better understand and appreciate art not by kind of objectively looking at the piece of art in front of us, but by understanding where the artist was at the time in their life they made that piece of art. So I read somewhere that in 2018, you had this idea for Kokomo City. What was happening in your world in 2018 that made Kokomo City seem like it had to become real?
Honestly, there were so many reasons why I had to do the film. I mean, or I wanted to do the film. I mean, personal reasons, social reasons. I tried to stay away from politics as best I could, but everything in the world is so political and sensationalized in a political way that it's really kind of hard to navigate that without looking like a coward or unintelligent. So I'm just trying to find a space that I could reach people without it being pushy or right. So initially when I thought to do Kokomo City, I was sleeping on a couch, someone's couch. Like for about 3 or 4 years, I've been sleeping on couch to couch. All of my friends that I have, they've all had me on their sofas and couches and for various times. And I just got to a place where I just started thinking, you know, it was a very dark place, honestly. And I've always played things by the book, always done things the right way as far as like just being a decent person making a living, you know, and never been any trouble, jail or you know, even a fist fight I've never had. So doing things the right way still got me banished and kind of like discriminated and disgraced out of the music industry. And it left me kind of like lonely and extremely vulnerable and embarrassed, ashamed. I was so ashamed journey, that experience. And what inspired me to do Kokomo City was the fact that I was seeing so much queer and transgender content, but I didn't feel that it was moving the needle forward in an urgent, provocative, relatable way. And I wanted to create something that represented not only me as an artist, but Black people, that was in a swag. I wanted something swaggy. Like there are some really great documentaries that you know were done around that time, but they just felt really I don't want to say corporate, but they felt really measured, you know. And like my brother's friends and his homeboys and cousins, they would never watch any of those LGBT documentaries. They just would never. They would have no reason to. Nothing stood out or nothing felt like it could connect them or bridge them. Kokomo City, I wanted to create, to do that, something I would want to watch. Something I know my brother would at least hear about. My dad would at least hear about. And that's exactly what has happened.
Thank you for saying that, because it's for Black people.
Yeah,
like the
absolutely.
Whole time I was watching it, I have this in my notes for later. I was going to be ordered with this, but I'm so excited that you said this, because I was watching it and I was like making my food and I was talking back to the girls. Like it was like a proper call and response.
Yes,
and I was like, this is for us, right? Because it's not a lot of art that you talk back to like that.
But see the difference. Yeah, because the difference is when I did this film, I had no agent. I didn't have CAA at the time. I didn't have my management company. I didn't have a producer. It was literally just me with no interruption, no second guessing, no one making me think twice. I had nothing. I just did what felt natural and also creative, that felt like, you know, this is my creative integrity and I'm going to completely do what feels like D. Smith and would represent me. But, you know, I had people like Spike Lee in mind, and I had, you know, all, you know, 90s films and even, you know, Boys in the Hood. There's, you know, little things that people wouldn't not catch in a documentary, but I didn't want to make a quintessential documentary because Black people, we watch certain things, but you got to really get Black people in their bag. That's the slang, that's the dialect, that's the imagery, that's the, you know, the music, it's the way it's shot. It's just got to be swaggy. And there's not a lot of swaggy content with LGBT people. It's just not, you know, and I think that's what I'm bringing to the table, and people are responding to it, you know, and Black women in particular are really championing this. Like, I know a lot of people like to paint out like Black women and trans women are against each other, but Black women are really stepping up and really saying like, this shit was dope. I can't wait for my husband to see this. I can't wait for my boyfriend to see this. Me and my girlfriends are gonna watch this. And that's a natural grassroots response, and you can't put a price on that. Like that is what it's all about, you know, my people coming to see something that I did on both sides of the fence.
Congratulations. I think that's what happens when we as Black people experience art made for us. Like, it's just so obvious that it's for us. It's different. I'm getting emotional thinking about it. Like, it just hits differently, right? And so the other LGBT documentaries that you haven't named, but that you're alluding to, of course your brothers and your dad are not going to watch them because those are gay documentaries. They're not documentaries about Black people.
Listen, a lot of these organizations are here to help, but a lot of times at the same time, they literally just pin us against each other. You know, every week there's a new rule, every week there's a new title, it's just a lot to keep up with. I'm almost at the place where I'm just like, personally, I just don't want any part of the extra splitting of the hairs. You know, I really just want to communicate as plainly as possible. That's all I want. I'm not gonna crucify anyone that says something to me that should be offensive if they didn't mean to. I'm not one of those people. And you know, I've been used in that way in the past, and I've fought it, and I got out of that, and I'm back where I belong. And you know, I don't want to tell any trans woman or queer people how to express themselves, but we need leaders in our community from top to bottom, from straight to transgender. We need all of them to come together in the room and decide how they're going to represent all of us and how we're going to come together and represent each other. Because when we have outside influences that don't understand our culture, it literally divides us. And these are powerful entities, powerful organizations that have helped in certain ways, but also has caused a lot of harm.
I read an essay by an author, Stephanie Bishop, describing her process of writing a novel, which she says is as much about destruction as creation. She says, quote, "At some point, the wrecking ball comes and it smashes its way through the artifice of whatever thing you've been diligently carving, or through whatever you've been trying to write in order to avoid." And it's so clear to me, reading her essay, that the process of making art is also what it takes to live. Right? You gotta destroy to recreate, bring everything down. So I'm curious about, in what ways might the process of creating Kokomo City reflect what you've learned through your own survival, thriving, and liveliness?
Yeah, wow, incredible. You know, when talking about this film, I also talk about my process of really forgiving. You know, and that I think that was the destruction of the wall that I built and the animosity that I built towards people that did me wrong. You know, even outside of me being trans, just all of the baggage and luggage and trauma that I brought, you know, with me over the years is so incredible how much energy I put, you know, just living, carrying that stuff, not wanting to leave it or destroy that. And I started to use that as an excuse for just defending myself. They did me wrong, da da da. But to do this and to make this film even to exist, I had to really forgive myself for being so hard on myself, forgive myself for also being mean to people, forgive myself for allowing people to hurt me, you know? But no one inspired or encouraged me to go through that process. It happened naturally. I didn't know what was happening. I just went with it. I did fastings. All of these things before Kokomo City really, you know, kind of like took root. And that is amazing. I love that analogy. You know, you of destroying to create. You have to get rid of to kind of make room for something new and real and vibrant and purposeful.
And before you go, what inspires you about the lives of sex workers? What makes them for you particularly important lives to document and in many ways immortalize?
I support sex work, but I don't encourage it. I'm intrigued by the process in which these women are engaged into being introduced into sex work. And I really want trans people as community to now teach the newer, you know, trans women, young women, that when this is not the 90s anymore. This isn't the early 2000s where this should be an option. You know, if it becomes an option, we have to support them. But we also have to present to them, hey, girl, if you really don't want to do that, you could get a job at Walmart. You really want not to be on the street, you could work at CVS. You could do other programs. There's really, really, really other options. May not be as quick or, you know, but I worry about trans women that have to do sex work. I am, again, I do support, but I do worry. And it's become very stressful after losing a cast member. It's become very different than when I started. And yeah, I just want us to become more aware that we should definitely protect younger trans women to avoid them for having to make that an option.
Dee Smith is a Grammy-nominated producer, singer, and songwriter. She is the director of Kokomo City, which won the Sundance Film Festival's Next Innovator Award and Next Audience Award, as well as the Berlinale's Audience Award in the Panorama Documentary section. A special thank you to Campbell X for always advocating for Busy Being Black and thus making this conversation possible. Busy Being Black is an exploration and expression of queer liveliness. And my guests are those who have learned to live, love, and thrive at the intersection of their identities. Your support of the show means the world. Please leave a rating and a review and share these conversations far and wide. As we continue to work towards futures worthy of us all, my hope is that as many of you as possible understand Busy Being Black as a soft, tender, and intellectually rigorous place for you all to land. Thank you to my friend Lazarus Lynch for creating the ancestral and enlivening Busy Being Black theme music. I'm so busy being black.
Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.